My first question for you, In-N-Out or Five Guys?
Man, Shake Shack.
Shake Shack. Wow. Okay. I've never gotten a third answer before. Why Shake Shack?
Well, for one, we don't really have either of those on the East Coast, so I don't ever really go. Yeah. So if I'm going to choose something, it's going to be Shake Shack. But, you know, if that. I had to choose, it's probably going to be In-N-Out.
Have you ever had it before? Like, ever? Have you been out and had one?
Once. And I was unimpressed with the fries. Yeah.
Yeah, they're, it's best to go animal style with the fries, where it has, like, onions and cheese, all this other good stuff on it. That's kind of how that's the secret way to do it. That's
well, you lost California me at onions, but I'll give it a whirl.
Welcome to 10 Questions with 10 Missionaries, brought to you by Gateway Seminary, with your host, Tyler Sanders.
I'm here with Andy Pettigrew, who's Director of Next Gen Mobilization with IMB. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what that means? What kind of work do you do?
I work with leaders and individuals in kind of an age bracket of 15 to 29. So think about those leaders as well. So we're stewarding relationships with all those in that age demographic to help lead towards more missional engagement. So I spend a lot of time personally with a lot of universities and seminaries and church pastors and church leaders that are working with, again, 15 to 29 year olds, which could be youth pastors as well, trying to help them in developing pathways to going overseas more long term. Mm.
Yeah, sure. Now, can you tell me a little bit about your just salvation story, just kind of some highlights of how you became a Christian to how you kind of landed where you are now?
Yeah. Man, God's grace. I mean, if I could just summarize it in two words, it would be God's grace in my life. And I have been around a lot of people that have amazing stories of transformation. Mine is simple by God's grace in that I grew up in a home with two loving, believing parents who raised me and going to church. So from as long as I can remember, just going to church. At the age of five, made a profession of faith to my pastor. My parents at that time believed, you know, if you want to get saved, you got to go to the pastor. I remember at that time I was struggling with sin. I'd done something wrong and just told my parents, I never want to sin again. I'm just tired of getting punished for doing something wrong. And they said, well, we can't fix your sin problem, but let us take you to the pastor who lovingly and shepherdingly just helped me to understand the nature of the gospel. And made a profession of faith very early on in my life. One of the reasons that that's really cool is about a couple of years later, actually, I remember when I was seven, I told my pastor the only thing I ever wanted to do when I grew up was to preach and be in a church and do ministry just like him, which seemed kind of weird for a seven-year-old. But I was the kid, and early on, when I would ride my bike through the neighborhood and tell anybody that would listen about Jesus, I got made fun of a good bit and got pushed around even by my own siblings because I was kind of a weird kid because I believed in this stuff. It was really my teen years, though, that things began to solidify. So I was like, there's no way that I was saved at the age of five. I'd been around 5 year olds. That's too young. But came to wrestle with the reality of the gospel. Did I believe that Jesus Christ died, was buried and resurrected, and that had I repented of my sins and placed my faith in Jesus? And I said, yes, those were true things in my life. And so a mentor said, whether that happened at five or right now, that's what it takes to be born again. And so anyway, some solidification, even in my teen years. Going on the mission field was never a matter of if, but when. And so I, had walked, alongside of my family, even after I got married and thinking, okay, when's this going to happen? My parents played a big role in that. They took me on a lot of short-term mission trips. So I wanted to be on the field at some point in my life. So there were a lot of stages after I got married before actually landing in Africa, which I'd love to share a little bit more about. But there were some stages to get to that point. Most of those stages were, these are different seasons in my life. I spent some time at a local church as a youth pastor. I spent some time in Pacific Northwest doing collegiate ministry there, actually working with the North American Mission Board. And then I said, well, I've got to get to the mission field. I got to go international. But I knew I needed to go to seminary. I actually took some courses from Golden Gate Seminary, which is now Gateway.
Yeah.
Took some courses there when I was in the Pacific Northwest. Ended up eventually at Southern Seminary, graduated from there. Also served as a director of campus ministries at Union University for several years. Again, still trying to get to the field. And then finally got open the door and said, it's time for you to go. And so my family, we had a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old at the time, and we moved to Africa.
Wow.
Yeah. We were there for about 13 years until coming into this role.
Wow. Okay. And can you tell me a little bit about the work you did in Africa?
We served in the country of Botswana for about 7 years. We were in Botswana primarily to work among university students. 75% of the population of Botswana would be considered youth. They were under the age of 30. So we had a real heart to work among university students, to work among youth, really seeking to help develop churches there, discipling young people, discipling youth, discipling those under the age of 30 towards healthy church. While doing that role, I was offered an opportunity to serve as a kind of a strategist for all of Sub-Saharan Africa, because the statistic that I just gave you for Botswana is true for all of Sub-Saharan Africa, the median age being around 18 or 19. So the question is, and really the one that laid heavy on us, is how do we see the next generation really understand the gospel, grasp the gospel, and steward it for the generations to come? If you look at missions in the global South, that's where the majority of Christians are now. That's where I believe the next generation of missionaries are coming from. Sub-Saharan Africa in 2018 ranked as having the world's largest number of Christians in any kind of region of the world. Many of those Christians, though, one could ask, though, what did they really fully understand the gospel? What is the nature of the church there? But knowing that 75% of the population is below the age of 29, the thing that kept me awake at night is that statistic of the number of Christians living in Africa could change in one generation. If the next generation, which is the vast majority of the population, if they don't grasp the true nature of the gospel, what is the future generations hold? So that's really what drove us. We were living in Botswana. I did end up moving to South Africa for several years in South Africa, kind of leading a lot of our city work. Something else about Sub-Saharan Africa is that the world's largest cities will be in Sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, most of the cities in Africa will be larger than New York City, Shanghai, and Tokyo in the years to come. And so looking at how do we develop strategies among cities. So I was in South Africa doing that, and then eventually landed in Nairobi, Kenya. That's where we spent the last couple of years of our time in Africa, primarily in leadership for the work there. So after serving in Nairobi, the Lord was leading us to transition back to the States to take on a couple of different roles. And one of those being the role that I'm in now. So transition to living in Richmond, Virginia, working at International Mission Board headquarters to steward the work of Next Gen for the IMB.
Yeah. Now, you've been a lot of places. What was the biggest culture shock moment for you and your family?
I think wrestling with just personally as a family, understanding the gravity of youth and understanding the gravity of how do we work with so many young people who did not know the gospel. You know, one of the things that was not really a culture shock moment, but a moment where it was really important for us to wrestle with a hard question, the right question. And I think for anybody who's listening to this, I would encourage you to wrestle with this question as well. Like, what do you do when someone says yes? So culturally, we were expecting, okay, it's going to take a long time. We're going to need to spend a long time with people in order for them to understand the message of Christianity and eventually disciple them. Within our first couple of months in starting ministry in the capital city of Botswana called Gaborone, we met a student there, and I began sharing the gospel with him. Actually, he had asked him to meet with me. So I remember sitting exactly where we were, under a tree, and asking him the question, or explaining to him the message of the gospel. And then, asking him the question about, like, which path are you on? Are you on the path that leads to righteousness, mm-hmm. or the path, are you going to continue in the path that leads to eternal separation from God? And he said to me, I'm on the path that leads towards eternal separation from God. And I want to be on the path that leads to life. Can I be saved right now? And I said, you mean right now?
Yeah.
I think it just threw me for a whirl. I was expecting him to kind of say, I'm not ready for this. And I don't know when I'll be ready. I expected it to take a long time. Knowing that Africans are very relational, and I wanted to make sure I earned the right to be heard. He was ready to be saved right now. And wow. I had to answer the question. Am I ready? If they say yes, you know, so often we share the gospel with people and we hope they say yes, but are we ready for the next step when they say yes? When you say, hey, do you want to follow Jesus? And they say yes, what is your next step? That was a really powerful learning experience for us right early on.
Yeah, that's a good one. Now, let me ask you about that. Let's focus in on that kind of period. What was your day-to-day like as a missionary? Like, what was your day-to-day work day like?
One of the things I love about living overseas that's actually been a little bit hard for us coming back to the States, we would spend every morning as a family in the Word, praying and studying the Bible, even when my kids were super young. I had a missionary mentor that said, no Bible, no breakfast. And he kind of drilled that into us, just recognizing we spend every day in the Word. We spend every day in prayer, recognizing that we cannot expect to go into war doing exactly what the enemy hates if we're not going to say to God, hey, I need you. We declare our need for you, and we're going to do that in prayer and studying your Bible to ask for help. So we did that together as a family. I mentioned that because being in the States, it's actually been really hard. I think the pace of life in America is so much more challenging. So we had a little bit more control of our schedule, just to say we have one mission today, and that is to get out of our gate and to go share the gospel with those who need it. Now, I had an administrative role as well with the organization overseas, and so I had emails that I had to respond to, texts I needed to get back to, business I needed to take care of, but every day I had a little bit of control over my schedule. So day to day, it was spend time in the Word personally, spend time in the Word as a family, just studying the scriptures and praying together, and then making plans to leave the gate to go and to talk to people. Again, I had to carve out time for the other business stuff that needed to take place. But honestly, and I'm not exaggerating, that really was our day to day. Like, get the stuff done that needs to be done, but figure out a way to leave the house to share Christ with someone today. And we had many seasons where we would travel to different places in order to spend maybe extended periods of time with people. We would travel to different villages. I would take students to a lot of different places and training them in gospel work and even church planting. But day by day, that was pretty much job one.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time working with young people. What would you say is a consistent challenge doing missions work with and alongside young people?
The culture, the youth culture that you may see in America is the same culture globally. Now, there's some variations, obviously, when we think about cross-cultural work and how the culture influences them. But social media, the internet, et cetera, has truly made this, made the youth culture a global one. So a lot of our challenges simply were just dealing with a lot of the things we deal with today. Today, we are thinking about identity issues. We're thinking about sexuality issues. We're thinking about issues that relate to various challenges in the culture and things that people are facing with temptations from the world. We were dealing with the same thing among youth there.
Yeah.
But I think some of the challenges that we faced, quite frankly, were just how do we make sure that the culture of Christianity that exists where we were working, that they were not ascribing to the traditions of their parents, that they were truly wrestling with the scriptures. One of the things that we faced among the younger generation, the education system really did affect a lot of the work, the gospel ministry that we were working with, just even the church work, just because there's a culture there of believing anything and accepting anything that your elders were telling you. This could, when I say elders, this could be your parents, grandparents. It could be familial. It could also be in the education system. Obviously it's in the government as well. So the education system in particular, because we were working with university students, you accept whatever your university professor is telling you. Or if you're in kind of the secondary school, you accept whatever they're telling you and you don't question that. So to think critically was difficult. One of the most powerful aha moments that we would have is when you would open up the scriptures and they would say, help me understand what that actually means. Is that really what the Bible is saying? Or if they hear a preacher saying something, they would not just take it at face value and they would really go and examine the scriptures like a Berean to say, is that really what the scriptures say? Those were big moments for us and did not come easily. So helping to learn how to think critically was just part of the work that made some of those challenges, made it somewhat challenging with working with those youth.
Yeah. This is kind of a two-parter or two sides of the same coin. What do you feel like is a spiritual gifting or kind of a natural strength you have that matches up well with the work you do?
I really enjoy teaching. I enjoy spending time with people and just opening up the scriptures. I don't know if that's a spiritual gift as much as it is just something that we all need to be doing, but something that I loved to do. And so spending a lot of time with few people and helping them understand the truths of the scripture, praying that impacting the few will, or investing in the few will impact the many. So teaching would be one of those. Also helping shepherd people through challenging situations. So I would serve kind of in pastoral roles where I would walk alongside of people through various challenges, helping even provide some guidance to people in life was really important, because it's where we were living, particularly in Botswana, just a fatherless culture. And so providing even some leadership along those lines as well. Yeah, I guess some giftings in administration too that helped kind of play into the work that I would do in a leadership role in Sub-Saharan Africa with the organization.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's the good side of the coin. Here's the other side of the coin. Can you tell me like a swing and a miss you've had, like maybe just something you guys tried in the mission field and like it didn't work out the way you expected or something like that?
Which one? I feel like my wife and I would regularly look at each other and say, when are we going to stop learning things the hard way? We would mess up on language. We would mess up on culture. We would try to start things culturally and it just didn't work. Some of the hardest seasons were when we were working with someone for quite some time and discipling them and teaching them the scriptures, and then come to find out they were still praying to their ancestors or going to some kind of witch doctor or something along those lines, and thinking, how did we miss that? How did we? I think maybe not a swing and a miss, but something we look back on that we learned is just the importance of the local church. The church is critical everywhere you go. Working with university students, it was hard to get them towards local church because it was hard to raise up leaders among them. And so looking back, I wish we would have started, worked more towards helping plant local churches in the city there. But you know, I think some of the fun things that fun is an operative word there, maybe funny things is just, you know, just messing up on foods and not like I would sit down in places that I shouldn't have sat down, eating with people when I shouldn't have been eating with, maybe eating with children, which is a funny thing to say, but in that culture, the men ate together. And so I would find myself sitting in places that I probably shouldn't have been sitting and looked at in funny ways. So anyway, the cultural things are things we look back on, and language and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I've got a question I ask everybody, and that's, what are you reading right now?
I just finished a book called The Escape Artist by Jonathan Friedland. The subtitle is something about the man who broke out of Auschwitz to warn the world. I literally just finished that book. I think it was a hard read because it talked about his challenges in a concentration camp, particularly one of the most renowned concentration camps. The thing that really gripped me after reading that book is that it didn't end well, in my opinion. When I say that, I mean, like, this guy literally survived incredible circumstances, and he escaped death while living in the concentration camp. He finally finds the means to escape the concentration camp, and he has one mission. The reason he was trying to escape was to be able to tell the world about the horrors of living in a concentration camp. And I kept thinking, there was a moment in reading the book, and this actually pertains to everything we're talking about, which is why I'm sharing this. There was a moment in the book where he finally escapes, and you're thinking, will this guy ever get out of this concentration camp? It's so horrible. He finally escapes, and I had a moment reading the book thinking, okay, you escape, just get out of there and hide and just wait until the war ends. But that was not his mission. His mission was to escape, to tell people, to warn them about the horrors of the concentration camp, to end the pain and suffering that was taking place.
Right.
And I thought to myself, man, what a parallel to our calling as followers of Christ. That thinking about what God has pulled us out of, the grace that he has shown us from being rescued from sin, being rescued from death, and we have a mission. It's not, he didn't rescue us so that we can relax. He rescued us so that we can be a part of his mission, so that the nations will know and worship and enjoy God. The reason I said it didn't end well is because this guy's life was a mess. He did warn the world. It was a really kind of hard time to do that. Most people didn't believe him.
Sure.
And then, you know, his life was just a wreck afterwards, and it didn't end where I wanted it to end, for him to find true hope in Jesus. The hope was not just escaping and warning the world. The hope was in Jesus. So anyway, it's a very powerful book. I'm currently reading a book, though, that I recommend called God Shines Forth. It's in the Union series with Crossway. All of those books are really good. Gentle and Lowly was one of those that a lot of people have read.
Oh, yeah.
So this is in that same series. And kind of the thrust of the book is, if we believe that it's the believer's responsibility to make God known in the world, we need to recognize that this cannot be done without first knowing and enjoying God ourselves. So it walks you through, like, how do you know and enjoy God on a personal level so that you are more effective in spreading the beauty of God among the nations?
Oh, that's really good. That sounds fantastic. My last question for you, how can a listener, how can a church leader or pastor who's listening to this get involved with the work you're doing?
My work, we spend a lot of time helping leaders develop pipelines, or even just being aware of opportunities that exist for next gen, because we need to recognize that we want to see more people going, praying, sending, and even giving. We want to see more of that take place so that the mission continues. And so you can go to imb.org generally and find anything you want to there. Our work is imb.org/nextgen, /nextgen. That website will take you directly to projects that exist on the field for those between the ages of 15 and 29 can go and to serve. There's opportunities for them to serve short term, midterm, or long term. You could spend a summer, you could spend a semester. The Journeyman program has been around for quite some time through the International Mission Board. Right. Journeyman, where you can spend 2 years of your life overseas, fully funded for those who are Southern Baptist. And those are opportunities to serve alongside of missionaries on the field, IMB missionaries on the field for 2 years. One thing that I want to share real quickly is another opportunity that exists right now that we want people to be aware of. It's under kind of the umbrella of a Project 3000. The job is really called a missionary explorer. Missionary explorer can spend 2 years of their life helping find and engage unengaged, unreached people groups. So the reason it's called Project 3000 is because in the world right now, there are at least 3,072 unengaged, unreached people groups. These are entire groups of people with little to no access to the gospel. And as far as we know, no one is working among them. So we're asking for 300 people to go and take a job going and living out of a backpack to find these unengaged, unreached people groups, begin to share the gospel with them, and then report back so that we can begin a missionary process among them, hopefully to send long-term workers.
Yeah.
You're joining a team. You are living out of a backpack. A one-star hotel was probably luxury. It's like you do receive training and mentorship and oversight, but I mean, it's like trekking through trails and places all over the world to find these unengaged, unreached people groups so that we can get the gospel to them eventually. So those, we have about 100 jobs in the books right now, and we're looking, you know, we would love people in their 20s to consider this.
Of course, yeah.
To find ways that they can go and serve overseas as well. Fully funded opportunity for 2 years, like the journeyman program.
That's awesome sounding. That really is, that's incredible.
Yeah. Be happy to share more and to drop some links in the show notes or whatever.
Yeah. We'll have all those available for people. Cause I'm sure there's going to be someone who hears that and they think, that is me. That's exactly what I want to be doing. That's fantastic. Awesome. Andy, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate everything you had to say.
It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for asking me.